Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings, everybody. Happy Wednesday, and welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. I am your host, Dean Weeks, and this is episode number 171. That's a lot of these things we've stacked up. With me, as usual, is Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
Did I hear that right? 171 episodes?
171, yes.
Wow, I only remember about like six or eight of them.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We definitely have had a good time.
Yeah.
So we've got a new book out. This one's by Ronan Duvall, and it's called Village Boss. It's an international crime thriller, spying, espionage. Main character is a Colombian who's got to travel the world and get caught up in some stuff and make some moral decisions. And that's Village Boss by Ronan Duvall. All editions are out there now, hardcover, softcover, all the e-books. Get your copy.
Another one that is out is The Gift by Gwen M. Plano, and this is part of the eight-book series from a group of women authors, and it's I'm forgetting the series title. It's Point
Harbor Inn.
Is it Harbor like Harbor Point? Harbor Point.
Yeah, Harbor Point.
Yeah, and this is a series where it centers around the Harbor Point Inn, and it's like a hotel, and each book is set in a different time period with different characters, and it's the goings on at this inn, and it's just an excellent book, and Gwen and the ladies really poured their hearts into it, and Gwen's is getting some really good reviews at this point, so get out there and grab a copy. It's available only on Kindle. So it'll be cheaper for you, but go out there and grab a copy of The Gift by Gwen M. Plano. So we are going to open up the phone lines tonight. We've already got a phone call lined up, which is cool. And you too can be part of the show and partake in questions and comments on the air or on Twitter. Here's how you can do all of that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right, so a couple of things here. Hopefully everybody's hearing us. Give us a shout on Twitter if you're hearing us. We've got a message here from Blog Talk Radio that says that there were some issues with them and connecting and running a live broadcast this evening. So let us know that you're hearing us. And Verwayne Greenhill, he says, it's a beautiful night here in the armpit of Florida, roughly 75 degrees right now. My wife and I are here ready to listen to the show. But he says, P.S., the hashtag Freshing Group tag that is normally embedded for posters is not here to be seen by the host. You will have to add it. I don't know what that means. Is it missing on something that our social media guy is posting? I'm not sure.
You're going to click over there, usually it gives you that hashtag up front at the beginning of your message. And I guess he's saying it's not doing that now.
Okay, yeah.
So you're
going
to have to manually type in hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
All right. I see. Yeah, I saw him mention that last week, too, and I wasn't quite sure what that was about. But all right. So,
all right. We've got another new book out.
Right.
This one's by Dave Hooker of Off the Hook Sports, or as Beam likes to say, Off the Hook Sports.
Darn, he was last week's guest.
Yeah. The book is Celebrate 98. It's a look at the 25th anniversary of its 1998 championship Tennessee Vols College football team. excellent book. It's got all the behind-the-scenes stories, color photos. Just it's very cool. If you're a college football fan, you're going to want to have this in your collection. That's Celebrate 98 by Dave Booker.
Yeah. Like I just said, Dave was a guest on the show last week. And if you happen to miss that one, it's in the archive. And get over there and have a listen. It was a fun time. Everybody had a good time. A couple of other books that are coming out soon. One is a print book and with all the other stuff, and one is an audio book. The Soul Whisperer's Decision, that's coming soon. That's another one by Gwen M. Plano. She really is busy hammering out these wonderful stories right now, so keeping eyes and ears open for that. Soul Whisperer's Decision. Mm-hmm. And the audio book for The Young Knights by Cheryl Carpinello. This is in progress right now. And as soon as I get done adding all of my stuff, Ethan Drew, our voiceover guy, has a few lines that he's got to reread. And I want to wait until this is all done so I can send them to him in one block. And it should be good to go. So hopefully we can get that done pretty soon. I'm hoping to have it done through the weekend. So we'll keep an ear open. And this is a good time for you to get yourself signed up to our newsletter, because these books, this program here, all the info is in the newsletter. And if you're not subscribed already, what's your problem? Get over there and sign up, and here's how you can do that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Inquiry with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right, let's take a quick look at the top 25 print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group. This is print only. I don't have the digital numbers here. We start at number 25, Hello Chattanooga, Famous People Who Have Visited the Tennessee Valley by NBC newscaster David Carroll. Of that, we've got Kenneth Lindquist's How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition. That's for people who want to become certified drivers and instructors, according to the different requirements in the various states. There's also a parent's edition of the same book that's out there for parents, teenagers, and young adults who want to help them become better drivers. Next above that, Operation Icebreaker, A Mac McDowell Mission by Robert G. Willis-Croft. That's one of the Mac McDowell Mission's submarine Cold War thrillers. And four notches above that is the first book in that series, Operation Ivy Bells, A Mac McDowell Mission by Robert G. Willis-Croft. In between those, we've got The Chair, Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love by Robert McKenzie. The first three volumes of that series are out now. And right now, 2 is trending. Of that, we've got Larry Landgraf's young adult illustrated chapter book, The Adventures of Ali Orangutan, about an orangutan that's captured and being shipped to a zoo in the United States, and he escapes and goes on adventures. Above that, American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain, the hardcover edition by Dr. Helen Burrell. Now, I mentioned Operation Ivy Bells was above that. That's the hardcover edition, and right above that is the softcover edition. Back to back, those two are selling. In fact, the numbers are identical. Hardcover and softcover equally selling in Operation Ivy Bells by Willis-Croft. Above that, Dick Ferrer Jr.'s The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction in Fayetteville, Tennessee. What do you think of that one doing so well, Bean?
That's mind-boggling. That really is. All these years later, and that still, I was just thinking when you said the title, I was like, again? It's still
again?
There?
Yeah.
It's sneaking, it disappears for a moment, then it sneaks back in there. Well, good on that.
Yeah. Above that, another Larry Landgraf. This is his memoir, Tales from the Riverside. And then above that, another Larry Landgraf, Into Autumn, A Story of Survival. That's the first of 4 dystopian future novels. It's his Into series, and each one's a different season. Into Autumn is how the series starts. Now, above that, we got David Carroll again, NBC newscaster in Chattanooga, Volunteer Bama Dog. Volunteer Bama Dog's a fun look at the South, people in the South, Southernisms, how they speak, stuff like that. Above that, look at this, Bean, Ronan Duvall's Village Boss.
Woo-hoo.
Hardcover.
Wow.
Hardcover. And that's a fairly expensive book. It's like 500 something pages, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Above that, Stephen Hargis's Eight Hateful Miles is back on the list again. Eight Hateful Miles, a sideline pass to Tennessee's fiercest rivalry. That's high school football, people. We published that book, I don't know, about 5 years ago, something like that. And every fall, football season, it jumps back onto the charts again. Speaking of football, the one about that, Celebrate 98. The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship by Dave Hooker. And that's the hardcover edition. That's a big book with color pictures, and it's just a great, great book. Above that, Mark Herndon, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Mark played drums, Country Music Hall of Fame drummer with the supergroup Alabama for almost three decades. And then he tells the stories in his memoir. We published that in 2016. It is one of our perpetual bestsellers, even 7 years later. Above that, Larry Jorgensen's Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Anger, about 200-something old Chryslers in the 1920s that never got to Canada. Now, we're going to be unpublishing that book in a few more weeks, so get out there and get your copies while you can. Above that, Celebrate 98. This is the paperback edition of Dave Hooker's book. Now, that brings us to the top five. Number five, paperback edition, Dr. Helen Burrell's American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain. Number four, B.A. Johnson's Sassy Discovers the AME Church. That's the first of two illustrated chapter books for children about the AME Church. Number three, Larry Jorgensen's Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Bangor, the paperback edition. That brings us to our top two. Number two, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders by NBC newscaster David Carroll. And that leaves us with the number one slot, and that's retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Page, Submariner. 30 years of hijinks, keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry's been out there promoting again. He shot back up into that number one slot. Jerry also has purchased advertising space in the New York Times on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So if you happen to be a subscriber, watch for Jerry's ad on that Sunday.
All right.
That's our top 25, people. Congratulations.
All right. And a couple more books that are in the pipeline here. American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki. This is a book of dark and sometimes disturbing poetry. It's really cool. And he's also got some short stories in there. And Robert McKenzie's Volume 4 of The Chair is coming soon. So keep an ear for that and get a hold of the newsletter, and you'll be up to date on all this stuff. And if you missed a program and, you know, you're busy and you can't sit down on a Wednesday evening and listen, like last week we had Dave Hooker on. Great show. Fun time. If you missed an episode, we've got an archive, and we're all over the place with this archive. So here's some of the places that you can find it.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
Dexter Jones is a military veteran suffering from PTSD. He has flashbacks he can't quite explain. There are gaps in his memory. Is it the result of his head trauma? Or is it the CIA running a program on him? Now a hired gun tasked to eliminate drug traffickers, Dex finds himself in Colombia wearing military fatigues and fully armed, but answering by name he's never heard. He sets off for an intercontinental mission to uncover the truth, even as assassinations and betrayal at the highest levels of government threaten to destabilize the world. Maybe it's not who Dex is so much as who he might still become. Now in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, Village Boss by Ronan Duvall is proudly published by Fresh Ink.
Yeah, so get out there and grab a copy. All right, so let's introduce tonight's guest. John was an English professor at Norfolk State University, where he designed and taught a course in how to write science fiction and fantasy. He is a former chairman of the board of the Horror Writers Association and has published over 250 stories in places such as Weird Tales, Whitley Strieber's Aliens, Fangoria, Galaxy, Endless Apocalypse, The Age of Wonders, and the Hot Blood Erotic Horror Series. John has published 24 books, including science fiction action adventure novels such as Beyond Those Distant Stars, Speaker of the Shack, A Senseless Act of Beauty, Alien Dreams, and 6 novels of the Inspector of the Cross series, Crossroad Press. He has also published a 4-book box set, The Amazing Worlds of John B. Rosenman, News It Up Publishing. In addition, he has published 2 mainstream novels, The Best Laugh Last, and The Young Adult and Merry-Go-Round Man. Recently, he completed the 2nd science fiction novel of his Dreamfarer series, Dreamfarer and Go East. Young man, you will soon be published. Well, it will be. All right, let me try that again. Dreamfarer and Go East. Young man will soon be published by Crossroads Press. 2 of John's major themes are endless mind-stretching wonders of the universe and the limitless possibilities of transformation, sexual, cosmic, and otherwise. And with that, welcome to the show, John B. Rosenman.
Thank you. I really appreciate your having me tonight. I should mention one thing that Dream Fair and Go East, Young Man, have been published.
All right.
So they are in. That's rather a key point I want to stress. Dream Fair came out over a year ago, and Go East, Young Man, over 6 months ago.
Right.
I'm currently polishing up the 3rd novel in that series.
So based on that bio, apparently you suffer from chronic writer's block, huh?
Sometimes I do, actually, but I keep writing through it.
Yeah. So, John, where are you from? Where all of you live? Where do you live now? What's the trek of your life arc?
Okay, so thanks for asking. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, way back in 1941.
Back when I was
and
school.
When I was 6, yeah. When I was 16, my family moved from Shaker Heights to Burton, Ohio, a small town about 30 miles west. And fast forward a bit, in 1982, my wife Jane and I moved to Virginia Beach, where I've lived ever since. And I did teach at Norfolk State, a historically black university, for 29 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, John, when you were growing up, since, you know, as Stephen pointed out, you know, you don't suffer from writer's block. Well, actually, he said you did, but, you know.
Sometimes.
Were you always,
most writers do.
What kind of child were you growing up? Were you always into reading and writing, or is this something that came later?
No. An important influence in my life, early life, was my father. You know, he gave me a novel, Men of Iron, by Howard Pyle, which kind of fired my imagination. At night, you know what he would do? He would tell me stories about Yanko, which means, I think it means John in Yiddish. I may be wrong about that. I was a kind of a bookish kid. In school, they would let you take out 10 books during the summer. And I remember the divine smell of books in the school library. A friend, family friend, gave me a book of Edgar Allan Poe when I was young. And another friend, a friend of my sister, a boyfriend, gave me a subscription to Amazing Stories. And I was off to the races. I also, when I was a kid, used to lie in bed at night and listen to the radio, The Shadow, The Fat Man, Inner Sanctum. So that's kind of what the kind of kid I was. I remember there was a comic strip called Mandrake the Magician, and there was a villain called the Dark One. And I used to send messages, letters to my family, pretending to be the Dark One, threatening them if they didn't give me this or that, all sorts of calamities would befall them. So, I was kind of a hyper in some ways. I was imaginative. And some of that has followed me all the way through life. I'm 82 and a half years old now, and in some ways I like to think of myself as still being a child in some ways.
Well, that's something that'll keep you young, I tell you that much.
It will.
Yeah, I've long said adults are just older versions of the kids they always were.
Right.
All right, well, we do have a caller on the line, so let's go and take the call here. This is coming from the San Fernando Valley area, area code 818. Hello, caller, you're on the air. What's your name?
Well, actually, this is Robert Willisroth, and I am calling from Denver, not from the San Fernando Valley. That's just the phone number that has followed me for decades.
Hey,
okay.
Hi, Robert.
I should have known that. Well, welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you. John, it is nice to hear your voice.
Thank you, Robert. Good to hear yours.
I've got a question for you. When I did a review of Inspector of the Cross, I mentioned that what it was a Boris Vallejo, Frank Pajeta painting given life within the pages of your novel. And I just wanted you to expound on that a little bit.
Well, you got me. You said that. I'm trying to recall precisely what you said. Would you repeat what you just said?
Was it really based on a painting?
But what I said is that Turcan was right out of the drawings of Vallejo and Pujeta, and the women in his life, human and otherwise, made Barbarella pale against them.
Well, the canvas of the novel involves a hyper hero. In some ways, there are comic book aspects to my portrayal of him. I don't know if that gets closer to what you mean, but that's the best I can sum it up in short notice.
Okay. One of the things that I noted in my review of that particular book is that it struck me as strangely parallel to the Pilgrim's Progress. And I am wondering whether this is just something that I saw or whether you might have put a little bit of that into the story as well.
In a way, Curtin, I did think of Pilgrim's Progress a little bit as I wrote the novel. In a way, he's a man on a mission trying to achieve redemption or a sacred pinnacle that represents success for him in life. He is trying to save the human race. And in saving the human race from this alien enemy, the Chen, he will be saving himself and achieving redemption. Along the way, he faces many temptations. The Slough of Despond, for example, despair and emptiness. That's a feature in my novel. At times, he feels like giving up. But he is a pilgrim, and he is not only a pilgrim, but he is a pilgrim who has lived for nearly 4,000 years. And at the end of the novel, at the end of the series, well, I don't want to reveal too much, but it's certainly at the end of the first, second, and third novels and fourth novels, he has not yet reached heaven and achieved his aim. So it seems to be a matter of endless striving for him. So I hope that more or less dovetails with your idea or understanding of the similarity between Pilgrim's Progress and Inspector of the Cross.
Yeah, I suspected as much, and as I read it, and as I thought about it, and as I glanced back at a copy of Pilgrim's Progress, I could see the parallels, and it's interesting to hear you say that, yeah, it was in your mind as well.
Did you also notice the similarities between Turton and Christ?
I did, yes.
Yeah, because he is carrying the fate of humanity on his shoulders. He is, in a way, he's taking the sins of humanity upon him and trying to ransom or save humanity from damnation, as represented by alien conquest. And so he's the best, actually, that humanity has to offer. But in book one of the novel, book one of the series, I may have gone a little too far, because he gives in to despair and acts in a very disrespectful way, I guess we could say, toward the people, some of the people he meets. So even the best of humanity may have weaknesses. Well, after all, Christ, after all, was tempted in the wilderness and had to be partly human to be tempted.
Yeah, you know, as for the listeners who have not read this series, one, I highly recommend it. It is a marvelous story that could be looked upon as just pure exciting space opera, but it has these deeper elements in it that if you wish to delve into it, you can really find out an awful lot, maybe about the author.
You might,
because while I am Jewish, and we know there's a lot of anti-Semitism right now, I guess I should mention that, I have been drawn to Christianity in many ways. One of my favorite series, for example, is The Chosen. I love movies such as Jesus Christ Superstar and Risen, which I think is a wonderful movie as well. So if you read between the lines, you will find a duality to my nature reflected there.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. We don't often have authors on this show who have the multiple layers that you've displayed in the Inspector of the Cross series. And I don't want to dominate this, but I do want to jump very quickly to your novel, Dreamweaver, which I think is the very best novel you've written.
It may be. Thank you.
I think that the concept is just remarkable. After World War III, the human race basically setting itself up to go into a dream state, except for those few who kind of run things and keep things going, and the guys who can't go into that sleep state and therefore have to survive outside of it, and they form an interesting antagonistic group. It's just a fascinating novel, I thought.
Thank you very much. It's a novel, actually, that, you know, I'm a pantser as opposed to a plotter. So I depend a lot on inspiration and momentum as I write. And this whole series that I'm writing was inspired by a made-up word that popped into my head many years ago. You know, we have Wayfarer, we have Seafarer. For me, it was Dreamfarer. And I also noticed in looking at society that people want to achieve a make-believe world. We watch social media. We're mired in social media. And it's as if we forget our real lives. Well, that's what we find in Dreamfarer. I think that most people, if they have the chance, the opportunity, will gladly lie down in a dream box or a CIU, a cerebral interface unit, and dream the rest of their lives away if the dreams were entertaining and rewarding enough. Maybe I'm
now.
Wrong about that. Pardon?
I said, I'm in the box now.
Well,
by
I don't
the way,
know if it's
how'd
the same.
You
I haven't played for nearly a month because I had COVID. And I didn't want to infect anyone, and I coughed a lot, I had congestion, and I had a fever for a while. So I will find out tomorrow morning when I return to the tennis wars and see if I still have some of my old talents. But I assume I'll be pretty close to it, what I was.
Well, good luck on that. I'm going to hang up so that I don't dominate this whole conversation. It has just been marvelous speaking with you.
Thank you for calling in. Likewise, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Robert.
Yeah, thank
don't
you, Robert.
Don't be a stranger.
And listeners, just to let you know, Robert G. Williscroft is going to be a guest next month on the Voice of Indie podcast. So keep your eyes and ears open for that. And we are going to take a commercial break here, and we're talking to John B. Rosenman, and we will be right back.
In an innocent 1958 American suburb, Shelley doesn't know the power of a kiss or how it will change her entire life. At 16 years old, she falls in love with a young man. One night, just one night, they go too far. Months later, pregnant and shamed, Shelley's parents banish her. Alone and heavily pregnant, circumstances force Shelley to cross the country in an old pickup. A mistaken turn leaves her lost in a forest amidst a severe snowstorm and in labor. In the dark of night, Shelley must get help for her newborn baby before they both perish. A light in the distance gives her the slimmest glimmer of hope. After Shelley wraps the infant in her father's old jacket, she trudges through the snow to a lighthouse keeper's cottage. Snowhouse buries the squat stone building. Will Shelley find shelter, or is it the beginning of the end? Read The Gift by Gwen M. Plano, published by Fresh Ink Group, exclusively on Amazon Kindle.
Now, from science fiction master Robert G. Williscroft, the Oort Federation, to the stars, the second Oort Chronicle. As the Oort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidore Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While Thorpe's group terraforms Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, a Tensor Matrix, the first Oort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Oort Federation to the stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobooks by Fresh Ink Group.
All right, the first book in that Oort Chronicles series by Robert G. Williscroft should be out in the next 3 or 4 weeks or so. So watch for that. It's called Ram.
All right. We're going to jump back into the telephone calls here. We have one of our longtime listeners and often caller, Dr. Helen Burrell. How are you doing tonight, Dr. Helen?
You're going to trap me because I want to congratulate Mr. Rosenman. But I don't have any questions because that's a whole field that I have no knowledge of, even though I admire it. Very hard work, and it takes a great deal of imagination, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, congratulations is an excellent reason to call in.
Yes, it is.
Thank you very much.
But
I think when
I read the bio about you, it's amazing what you've accomplished. Amazing. And you're a professor, too, right?
Yes, I am. An English professor. I was a full professor at Norfolk State. And
yes, but you're teaching fantasy and sci-fi writing, right?
That was one course that I devised. I introduced it into the curriculum, but I basically taught freshman composition and various literature courses.
Now, has anybody you taught become a writer, a published writer?
I didn't quite hear you. Has anybody what?
I'm sorry. Has any of your students become a published writer as well?
Yes, indeed. It's funny you should mention that.
That's why I want to congratulate you. Let me hear. Okay.
One, Zelda Lockhart runs a creative writing school of sorts online, and she has published 3 or 4 novels. In a way, she's
well, good for you.
Right? She's partly, I hope, but I'm very, very proud of her. So I've had a couple like that, but she's really remarkable.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but it's due to your good professorship, right, and your creativity.
I would like to pat myself on the back a little bit. She was in several of my classes, including creative writing, in which I talked about being published and writing a novel for publication. So I tried to gear creative writing, which I taught, I tried to give it a practical edge so that students could come out of it and actually try to be published.
Wow. So I asked a good question, right?
Yes, you did. And I should mention about science fiction that it covers a broad swath of a broad spectrum, from very soft science fiction to hard science fiction. And very soft science fiction may be just like resemble many novels that you might yourself have read, with just an ingredient or two, a theme or two that's science fiction-y in nature.
Do you mean like eerie?
Like what?
Eerie? Eerie, E-E-R-I-E? Is that what you mean?
It might be a little bit eerie. It might have an element of the supernatural. Robert Willscroft mentioned Pilgrim's Progress, which is a religious book. You might regard that as fantasy a little bit.
Mm.
So you may have read books that have a little bit of science fiction or fantasy in them.
Mm. Well, it's amazing, but you do have a broad swath of writing, right? So I congratulate you, and I'll have to pick up some of your books.
Thank you. Please do. I could use the sales, and I can use new readers.
And reviews.
Oh, good.
And reviews.
And,
well,
yeah.
Tell him about mine. Tell him about my book. Okay?
All right. We'll
but congratulations on what you're doing. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling, Dr. Allen.
Okay.
All right. You want to roll another commercial,
Bean? Sure. All right. Since we've been talking about it, this one here is a little bit about the Celebrate 98.
Dave Hooker here, longtime Tennessee sports writer, and I know that true Tennessee fans are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the legendary 1998 Tennessee Volunteers Championship season. Tell you what, you celebrate 98, try to bring the full color photos and detail of the transfer of power from Peyton Manning to Al Wilson, the preparation to win the first BCS National Championship, the locker room dynamics, and the challenges of a team rising above deep tragedy. Key plays include interception, a fumble maybe against Arkansas, and a bit of trickeration. Also, there's that Florida game. I analyze the leadership, the strategies, and the players' commitment to each other and share what we are still learning from this team even today. Discover what happened to those heroes of the gridiron and where they are now. Proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group, Celebrate 98 is available in all the digital forms, but you can also get your own soft cover or jacketed hardcover keepsake edition from booksellers worldwide. Want an autographed edition? Go to offthehooksports.com. That's offthehooksports.com, and I'll personalize it for you. Celebrate 98 is a collector's item and a cherished gift that belongs to all fans of college football and the Tennessee Volunteers.
Hey, we're talking to sci-fi master John B. Rosenman, and we're taking phone calls. If you want to call in at 516-453-9902, Got a question for John? Got a comment for John? Or you just want to congratulate him? Call in 516-453-9902.
Yeah, I see over here on Twitter, Robert McKenzie, he shared a comic strip of Mandrake the Magician.
Oh, man. That goes back, yeah. Yeah, look at that. What a classic. Cool. All right, so, John, tell us about your family. You know, after 82 years, certainly you've accumulated maybe a grandkid or two. What's going on?
What's going on? Well, I've been married for 56 years.
Ooh,
to the same woman.
Still trying to get it right, huh?
If you get it right, you don't need to stray or experiment elsewhere.
Yeah.
We have two children. Our son is 45, David. And our daughter is Lori, 52. She lives in Missouri with her boyfriend. And they're all pretty happy, and we have two granddaughters, and get ready for this, we have one great grandson, Rowan, who's 8 years old. I'll say that again. He's a great grandson.
Wow.
So I've been around for a while.
I bet he's a great great grandson too.
Yes, he is. He really is.
Well, that's cool.
And every Sunday I play tennis with my son, who's getting better. And beginning to challenge me, beginning to show his old man up for the old man he is.
Yeah, that's cool. So, Beam, we have another caller?
We did, but it dropped. So we'll just keep an eye on the call board. Yeah, there he is. He's back. All right, we're going to go ahead and take this call. Let's see here. All right, this is from Virginia. Hello, caller. What's your name?
Hi, am I the caller?
You're the caller. What's your name?
Okay, before I get into anything, John, can you tell me what time it is?
What time it is? Okay, 8:42. Gail?
So we've been missing you on the tennis courts.
You'll do anything to find out what the time is, don't you? You won't buy a watch, though.
No, I only want to know it from you. No, I've been enjoying listening to the show. We've missed you out on the tennis courts, but I also called in the sad red.
You're so sweet. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, I should be back. I should be back
Friday,
soon.
Right?
Pardon?
Okay, well, come back Friday. Plan on doing some croquet, too, right?
I might do that. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. And thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it.
I want to say, too, I've read two of your books. The most recent one I read was The Merry-Go-Round Man, and thoroughly enjoyed that.
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for buying it. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming to the book signing. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and the other one, help me remember, it was that group that moved to another planet to go back to living life the way they used to.
Oh, boy. I wrote that
novel? And there was... There was some oversight by the government. They didn't like the way they were doing everything. They were doing it all the old ways.
Who wrote this?
Oh, geez. Maybe I just imagined it.
It wasn't Dreamfair. Trying to think which one it was. I didn't know you bought two.
All right. No, you loaned that one to me, I thought. But then again, it might have been another author at our tennis group, huh?
No, don't do that. No. I just can't recall the title.
I'm teasing. I'm going to look I keep messing up
you
here.
You are a tease.
Well, we have missed you out on the tennis court, so I'm glad you're going to be back Friday.
Thank you. I will return soon. I shall return.
You better. I need to know what time it is.
Okay. And it is now 8:44.
Very good. Okay.
Gail, for the benefit of listeners, is on the tennis court, and she often asks me what time it is. I'm always glad to give it to her.
Because
she has important
to me,
things
right.
to do.
All right, well, John.
Thanks again.
Well, thanks for calling in, Gail. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Gail.
Yeah. My pleasure. Enjoyed it. Y'all take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Oh, Gail.
Tennis partner, huh? All right. Fantastic.
Yes, she is.
Now,
yes, she is. She's very good.
Now, you touched on your family and all that good stuff there. Hobbies and interests. How do you spend? Do you have free time? And how do you spend that? Obviously, tennis is one of those things.
Yeah.
How long
I
have you been playing
tennis? I've been playing. My father got me into it when I was about 16. So I've been playing off and on since then. That goes back to 16 to about 56 years. No, 66 years. So I've been playing that long. Other hobbies. Obviously, I like to read and write fiction, science fiction, nonfiction. Currently reading the book thief, Death by Black Hole by Tyson. And I love boxing and football and boxing and martial arts. Sometimes I put them into my fiction. And obviously, I spend too much time online with social media, Facebook, and the like. So those are some of my interests.
Do you participate in the martial arts or just watch?
Nope. When I was 15, I wanted to, 15 or 16, I wanted to enter the Golden Gloves in Cleveland. And my father said, hell no, you're not going to do that. Because I would have gotten my car cleaned. But in the Merry-Go-Round Man, I created a character modeled somewhat after myself who has two great talents. He could be a magnificent expressionistic painter, which his Jewish father denounces, or he could be a world-class boxer. And he has to choose between those two gifts. So I did get boxing, in particular, into that novel.
Cool. Well, we're glad you didn't get your clock cleaned, because then you wouldn't be able to tell Neil what time.
No, my father would not have permitted it. I would have gotten demolished. A friend I had, a black kid, his father was the interim light heavyweight champion of the world. And that was partly an influence on that novel as well.
Okay. John, you mentioned that you recently had COVID. What other kinds of health issues have you been dealing with?
I'm so glad you asked that. Besides COVID, when I retired at the age of 70, I was going to retire anyway, but about that time I developed a mysterious disease, and the doctor couldn't diagnose it. And it turned out, you know what it was? I'm leading you on here a little bit.
What was it?
I went down 120 pounds, developed a terrible red scarlet itch over half my body. My system shut down. It turned out to be celiac disease. And celiac disease is caused by an allergy to a protein called gluten. So until it was diagnosed, I was semi-bedridden for 6 weeks. And the prognosis looked pretty grim. But eventually, I recovered. I took a steroid, and that caused some cataracts to ripen in my eyes, and that caused a new problem. So, another disease I have is sleep apnea, and I had about 3 near-death experiences. I went to bed, and I couldn't breathe. I was sleeping, and I knew that if I didn't get up and I didn't get vertical, I would die. That was what it felt like. And it was finally diagnosed, and now, you know what somebody with sleep apnea often has to do? They have to wear a mask, a CPAP machine, at night. And I used this real-life problem to write a novel that may generate an entire series. And the first novel is called A Breath of Fresh Air. A Breath of Fresh Air. And that's in the pipeline at Crossroad Press that will be published sometime in the near future.
Wow.
It is, of course, a mixture of science fiction and fantasy. One hint, the machine my main character wears in the novel becomes alive and intelligent. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah, with all the various health issues, that can be a horror. Tell us about the Horror Writers Association, and how did you become involved with that?
Okay. Well, ever since I was a kid, I liked horror movies and horror comics. You know, Them. You know, Them, The Thing, The War of the Worlds, the 1953 version, hooked me. I almost froze with fear when I watched that movie at the age of 12. And I kept writing and reading novels, horror novels, and seeing horror movies. And so I joined, since I was published in small press magazines primarily way back when, and I joined HWA, the Horror Writers Association, as well as SPWAO, which is the Small Press Writers and something, whatever. At one time, I was the vice president of that. But I did join the Horror Writers Association, and one of the fellow trustees, was Peter Straub, who wrote Ghost Story and collaborated with Stephen King.
Yeah.
And I used to go to conventions and try to network with publishers. And it was a thrilling period in my life. I would come home from work and hop in the back of a truck to drive off to this or that convention. So that was my experience with it, and it really helped me to network with a lot of publishers and magazines that I discovered. One element of horror was erotic horror. I don't know if you've heard of that, but there was a series called Hot Blood, which was published in 6 or 7 different languages throughout the world, and I had a couple of short stories in those paperbacks.
Wow.
So that's an important chapter in my life. I'm honored to have been chairman of the HWA. Really interesting. A little bit at odds with being a university professor, because they sometimes look at me a little bit askance because I did write horror and science fiction.
Well, somebody's got to write it. I mean, those are some real popular genres.
Absolutely.
And the way I see it is if you're a professor and you're educated, you're going to write quality sci-fi and horror. So there you go.
Absolutely. Certainly you have a responsibility to do that and to write the best fiction you can. And in writing the best fiction you can, it's important to get good editing. That's one thing I would like to stress to any would-be writers out there, that it's important to not only to write, but to rewrite and to get the reactions and opinions of others who can give you good advice.
Yeah. All right. We are talking to John B. Rosenman, and we're going to take a commercial break, and we will be right back.
I'm David Carroll, and I'm proud of my recent books, Chattanooga Radio and Television, Volunteer Bama Dog, and Hello Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley. Like many folks, I spend too much time on social media, but I put that time to good use. For years, I've been collecting social media misspellings, misinterpretations, and other mishaps from tweets, text messages, even the signs you see at stores and on the highways. I've collected the funniest foul-ups in my latest book, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's homemade social media blunders. I top them off with my own snarky comments, and they're illustrated by a talented artist, my friend Mike Salter. There are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments in the book, more than 400 of them. We all make mistakes, and sure, you can blame it on spell check, but maybe, just maybe, we didn't pay enough attention in English class. Either way, this book will bring a smile to your face or to the face of someone you love. We can all agree what the world needs now is laughter, and lots of it. I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats.
What drives a man to spend 26 years performing night after night? To persevere through a stifling tour bus, bad food, strange women, flared tempers, a plane nearly blown from the sky. Just how did that troubled military brat with a dream claw his way from dirt floor dive bar shows to the world's biggest stages? Aviator, author, and Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon lived that dream playing with Alabama, one of the most popular and celebrated bands of all time. He learned some hard lessons about people and life, the music industry, the accolades and awards, how easy it is to lose it all, and how hard it is to survive, to embrace sobriety, to live even one more day. Herndon's poignant memoir offers a tale at once cautionary and inspirational, delightful and heartbreaking, funny yet deeply personal. From innocence to rebellion to acceptance, can a man still flourish when the spotlight dims? Are true forgiveness, redemption and serenity even possible when the powerful say everything you achieved somehow doesn't even count? That you're not who you and everyone who matters thought you were? Find all this and more in Mark's remarkable memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in paperback and ebooks, and now in the keepsake dust-jacketed hardcover edition demanded by true fans. Mark Herndon refuses to slow down. So look back, look ahead, and join him on the trip. He's taking the high road.
Okay, we're talking to sci-fi master John B. Rosamund. We've still got a few minutes to take some calls. John, your work has a certain, most of it has a theme to it, a transformation kind of a theme. What's that about?
I've just been fascinated by the theme of transformation. One thing, it's basically about one thing changing into another and then another and something else that you don't expect. For example, the a caterpillar changing into a butterfly. On the surface, would you ever think that a caterpillar would turn into a butterfly? I have transformations similar to that in several of my stories and also in my novels. One of my short stories is called When I Was Michelle, and it's about a person who discovers that whenever he makes love to somebody, he changes into the opposite gender.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know that happened.
You know, what would you do if you had somebody you loved, but you knew that when you made love to that person, either to him or her, you would change into the opposite gender? So I've been fascinated by that. I think it's pretty important. Also, transformation in character. Somebody changing into something that they're not. Human beings tend to be rather fixed, seem to me to be rather fixed in their personalities, but I like to explore situations when they radically change, and radically change for good. So that's a little bit of what transformation is about.
All right. Now, let's segue into talking about some of your books here.
That would be nice.
Let's do, tell us a little bit about Dreamfarer. What's this about and where did it come from?
Okay. I mentioned before it came from one word, Dreamfarer, that just popped into my mind one time.
Yeah, I'm talking about
and
the story itself.
Oh, it's futuristic. It's the year 2170, about 150 years from now. And this is 90 years after World War III. And civilization is decimated. The countries are semi-destroyed. But there is a industry of dream machines, of centers. And at the age of 32, each person will have the option to be interfaced in a CIU, cerebral interface unit, and they can dream the rest of their lives. And they will, before they go under, they will have described the dreams they would want, the four or five dreams they would want, cycles they would want. And they would dream those for the rest of their lives. They would not know they're dreaming. And it would be wonderful. It would be far happier. They would be far happier and more find life more interesting than most of us do in rather dull reality. Unfortunately, some people wake up. They become wakers. And they will be forever unhappy because they can never go back to dreamland. And there are also those who are called wreckers who try to strive, ruin society, to tear down the centers and destroy them. The hero, Sam Adams, joins the resistance. That's what they're called, the resistance. And they want to tear dream centers down because they feel they destroy life for people. They take away what is most precious. I mean, after all, you're just lying there dreaming. And some people today are hooked on, for example, in social media, and the only lies they experience are what they experience online, in Facebook, or wherever. So that's basically what the novel's about. Sam Adams joins the resistance, and he tries to dedicate his life to tearing down these dream centers and returning people to real life, as he calls it. And the three novels so far in the series follow his progress and his various love affairs with women as he continues. So that's basically what it's about.
That's a new release, Dreamfarer by John B. Rosenman. You've got another release, too. Go East, Young Man?
Yes, that's the sequel. And I'm working on the sequel to the sequel, which is called Dream Chaser. I hope it will be out within a year.
Okay. Now tell us about your Inspector of the Cross series. How many books are in that, and what's that about?
There are six. And the main character is Turton. It's the far future, and the human race has been invaded by a superior alien race. That is, it's superior militarily. They have all the weapons, and they are pounding humanity into submission. At this point in history, humanity has reached the stars, but unfortunately, the Chen are superior, and they are going to overwhelm humanity unless something changes. The main character is an inspector of the cross. It's a empire. Human empire is derived from Christian origins. That's why they're called the cross. And he is an inspector because he's inspecting reports of weapons, superior weapons, that might turn the tide against the Chen. And whenever there's a report, he goes and investigates it, as do other inspectors. But he's the best of all of them. that unfortunately it may take 100 years to investigate a weapon because civilization is spread out amid the stars and it takes a long, long time to reach any particular port or destination where there's been a report of a special weapon. So he has to travel in cold sleep, in suspended animation. So that means he's actually about 4,000 years old, even though he's only about close to 40. And so his parents are millennia dead. He's, at one point, he goes, visits his space station, and he meets his great-great-great-grandson, who's an old man. But he keeps continuing to find the, it's like the Holy Grail, a weapon that can save the human race. And finally, in book one, he finds it, or what he thinks might be the weapon. So that's the basic background of it. Robert Willscroft said it reminded him of Pilgrim's Progress. The pilgrim is making a progress. He has a divine goal in mind, and so does Turton. It's an adventurous space adventure involving romance and a great deal of futility.
And rest
all right,
let's, chocolate pie.
Does it sound interesting to you?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's move on to the Starfighter Chronicles. What's this about?
It's three novels, right?
That is the first three novels of the Inspector of the Cross series.
Okay.
And the previous publisher went out of business, so these novels found a new publisher in Crossbow Press. And I gave it a new title. Turton is a Starfighter, and their Chronicles, which trace the progress of his adventures as he moves toward the goal. And I don't want to give too much away, but finding a weapon that can, a superior weapon, is an extremely difficult task. And again and again, he thinks he's on the trail of something that might turn the tide, only to be disappointed. And these are only the first three novels. The fourth novel in the series, what is the fourth? Is Conqueror of the Stars, and that leads to the sixth novel, which is Crash, and I may be losing you right now, but I do want to mention one other novel, Skyburst, which is about a young girl who becomes an inspector by herself. So that's a different hero in this saga of six novels.
Sounds like a whole universe. So what about Senseless Act of Beauty? Is A Senseless Act of Beauty a standalone book?
Which one?
A Senseless Act of Beauty?
Yes. A Senseless Act of Beauty is standalone, yes. That's my biggest novel, my most ambitious novel, and my longest novel. There's some things that are different about this. It's a novel that, it's a frame narrative. It contains chapters which I published elsewhere as short stories. So there are shorter stories within the longer narrative. It also is an African science fiction novel involving a black character of Nigerian descent, a biobotanist in the far future. And I taught for many years at a historically black college and university, both of them. And one of the things I tried to bring up in my class was the colonization of Europe, that Europe went into Africa, black countries with a black population, and conquered them. And that is something similar to what happens in A Senseless Act of Beauty. There's this African-like, beautiful African-like world. And the hero visits it and then it is invaded by the new Europeans. I don't want to give too much away here. But this novel is also partly inspired by the movie, wait for it, for The Forbidden Planet. Did you ever see it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
The Forbidden Planet. Like Forbidden Planet, this novel involves an amazing civilization that visited it and left, and left vast underground machines and a technological center, similar to what the Krell left in Forbidden Planet. So I wanted to create a whole new planet with an African flavor to it, and I wanted to introduce the theme of outside conquerors who come in and try to take it over. And you know why it's called A Census Act of Beauty?
I know.
Why?
Could you? I got that title off of a bumper sticker, A Census Act of Beauty. It doesn't make much sense. We think beauty is not senseless. It's very, very purposeful. It has great meaning. Well, the hero, Aaron Okonkwo, who has Nigerian ancestry, he has to rediscover his Nigerian heritage and be a fighter to save this world. And he's out facing overwhelming odds, and that's why it's a census act of beauty even to attempt it. So that's a little background for you. It's about 115,000 words long, perhaps a little bit longer, a framed narrative story featuring alien sex, I might mention. I threw everything into the story, and it may be a little bit messy, but it was an experiment, which I'm glad to have attempted.
Oh, so you've got a young adult book as well, right?
It's an adult book?
Young adult.
Oh, the young adult book is The Merry-Go-Round Man. I have to admit, there are three people in that story from my youth, two friends and myself, and we all passed through a sea change. One of the boys is early on, they are sitting outside a school on a merry-go-round. You know, one of these little merry-go-rounds that turned in the school playground. You'd get on and ride around and around.
Yeah.
And it had a kind of a rise or shelf that rose up. And one of the kids says to the other, the one who climbs to the top of this merry-go-round, man, the one who gets there first will be a winner for the rest of his life. And he will be the merry-go-round man.
Wow.
So the rest of the novel follows these three kids. And one of them excels as an athlete, as a football star. One of them, the black kid, is kind of torn in many different ways. His father is a world champion boxer, as my friend was. And one of them, in a way, is me. And I explored the theme of whether or not you can make a declaration like that. The one who gets to the top will be the merry-go-round man, the winner for the rest of his life, or not. So it follows, the novel follows these three kids as they grow up from the age of 12 to about 17.
Okay. So you've been published for a while. What kind of fan reaction have you had, feedback to your work?
Fan reaction has been pretty good, and it's growing. There are some readers who really get and appreciate what I'm trying to do, and that's extremely rewarding. Without mentioning names, there's one fellow who says he'll buy every book I publish. I wish I could clone him. That would be great.
I'm going to need his name.
Pardon?
We're going to need his name.
Are you going to?
No.
No, I can't give it to you. Their feedback is important, though I don't always know what to do with it. You know, one guy said recently that the beginning of one of my novels was confusing to him. I won't tell you which one, but I don't think it is confusing. I just think it requires a little bit extra of an effort from the reader. Generally, though, I think find their feedback is important for strengthening my novels. I will listen to anybody. If two or three mention a problem, then it's probably valid. Recently, this happened within a week ago, a fan found two errors, which I've since gotten my publisher to correct in future printings of the novel, at least the Kindle version. So fan reaction is important. And I'm getting more and more of it online, places like Facebook and in neighborhood, which is for my general community. I've sold
great.
Some novels there.
All right, well, we've been talking to science fiction master John B. Rosamond. John, how do people find you, follow you, contact you? You got a website, you use social media handles. How do we get a hold of you? Hello?
Hello, John.
Hello.
Yep. Hello.
Hello.
I'm here.
Yeah, John, how do we get a hold of you? How do we follow you? Do you have a website? Where are you out there?
I was hoping you would ask that. I have two email addresses, I should mention.
John?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm still getting
Are
you
looking for
off?
The stuff? Are you getting some kind of feedback somewhere?
I am. I'm listening to the program. Okay, it's off now. Let me make a stab at it. I welcome comments. And anything. Oh, there it comes again.
Well, just plow through. Tell us how to get a hold of you, and we need to close out. Okay, well, we're not hearing.
I tapped out of it. Let me try again. Anyone who would like to contact me, I'm very open to that. You can email me at either jrosemann@cox.net. Leave out the N, jrosemann@cox.net, or johnr829@gmail.com. You can visit my website at http. /www.johnrosamond.com. I have a blog at http://johnrosamond.blogspot.com. I also have a Facebook author page and home page, an Amazon author page. You can find me all over the web and the internet. Does that help? Is that clear?
Yeah. All right.
I was getting another program just came on here.
Huh.
All right, John B. Rosamond, Sci-Fi Master. If you've missed any of this episode, check it out in our archives. It'll be out there in the next day or two. Now, next week we've got author Dana Wayne, and after that, the day before Thanksgiving here in the U.S., what's happening?
That's a rerun. That's an encore performance with Patricia A. Guthrie, author of Eerie Charms. And some other really cool novels. She's into the spooky stuff, so tune in for that. Even though it's a repeat, if you missed it, it's a great interview. So tune in for that. And after that,
We'll have Judy White Arts. She's going to have a new release, her first book, The Essence of Spiritual Awakening, Judy White Arts. And after Judy?
After Judy, we've got Gwen M. Plano. She's coming back, and she'll be talking about her two new books, actually, The Gift, and then the one that we're getting ready to publish here before too long. So tune in for that, and Gwen will share all of her she'll catch us up on all of what she's been up to. And after that,
Carlisle Toms, author of The Calling Dream, he's going to have a new release coming out soon called Edge of Smoke. So we'll have Carlisle on to talk about that. And then we've got another sci-fi master. Who's that?
And then we've got Robert G. Willis-Croft making another return to the show, and that's always a fun time. And so get ready to call in with your questions and whatnot, and we'll have a fun evening of it. And after that...
That brings us to the end of the year. On December 27th, we're not going to have a guest. It's just going to be the two hosts, so we're going to be in there. We haven't even decided what we're going to do yet, but we're going to try to make it fun, and it's going to be the highlight of your year. So tune in. We appreciate it.
And there might even
support.
Be a beer or two drink during the show.
There is no telling. Might give away some books. It's going to be crazy. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to you callers and for people you people who participated on Twitter. And thanks again, John B. Roseman, for being a great guest.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And please, could I ask listeners to visit places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble online, and check out my books. I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
All right.
All right. We will see everybody next week, so take care.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Submariner, 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry Pate's semi-autobiographical collection of 60 stories recounts his 30 years in and around the U.S. Navy submarine fleet, ranging from lighthearted to wrenching. All are poignant inside looks at naval operations rarely seen by outsiders. Topics include the real story behind the shuttle Challenger tragedy, risking his own life underwater, discovering a Soviet spy living across the street, surviving when an engine ignites, critical missions, and the everyday lives of men and women of the fleet. Compiled by author Robert G. Willis-Croft and proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Submariner is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Dive into Submariner for hijinks and breathtaking adventure with this poignant memoir by a true American hero.
Of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.